Shall we get going? All right. All right. Thanks for being here. We're the final session for Saturday, 5 to 6, and you're in here with us. And I'll bet I know what you'll be doing right after this. So thanks for staying here. Let's get going. My name's Tom Parrish. The name of the panel is Social Marketing Strategies. Metrics, where are they? Okay, there's going to be a sort of a dual purpose here, both going to talk about some strategies. We're also going to talk about metrics as it relates to strategies. Now, anybody that has been involved in social media related, how do I prove it to my manager metric stuff, knows there's not a solid answer on that yet. Maybe never. But hey, that makes for a great panel, right? So that's why we're here. This is what's considered intermediate level. So the assumption is if you've got some familiarity with blogging, microblogging, audio, video podcasting, RSS forums, user-generated content, things like that, we're not going to go into any definitions and talking about how you use those. Those are the building block components that make up social media that you use in your social network that are a part of your social marketing strategy. So, and even if you're not too familiar with those, thanks for being here. Got a full room, and that's what counts.
People.
Yeah. More people. All right. So, quick poll. How many people are involved in an effort with their company to try to convince their manager that social media is a good thing to be getting involved in? All right. Okay. Pretty good show of hands. I had a sort of refinement on that. How many people are doing that with a company, let's say 100 or less people? Okay. Now, 100 or more than 100 people. So some fairly large corporations and whatnot. All right, that's a good match for what we have today. My motivation for this is in my work as a consultant in the area of social media, social marketing strategies, especially at the enterprise level and B2B, business to business, but sometimes business to consumer. In the last few years anyway, there's this big issue of what are the CIO, CTO, CMO, you know, whatever. Why are they afraid of social media and social networking? I mean, you get it up to that level and it's like, balk. And probably, you know, more importantly is that what they want to know is how can you leverage social media or a social marketing strategy for business growth? And, you know, you need metrics to do that. And therein sort of lies the conundrum. All right, so I'm going to quickly go through some introductions so you can associate the names with voices, and then we're going to jump right into this. We'll have a series of about six, maybe seven questions. I'm going to save room at the end, 10 minutes for question and answers. I have one shout-out. There's a man here, Dave Evans. Where are you? There you are. Shake his hand. Was very helpful in the last couple of weeks, digital voodoo and helping me sort of get my ideas together, bounce some things off. Agree, disagree on various things. And so thanks for that. And hopefully you'll be asking questions too. So let's get going.
Okay. Thanks, Tom. Micro check. Okay, cool. My name is Rohit Bhargav. I work at Ogilvy in a group called 360 Digital Influence. And when Tom asked me to join the panel, we found out about our time slot, 5 p.m. on a Saturday. Usually I thought, oh man, 5 p.m., God. But at South by Southwest, as we all know, everything happens after about 5 p.m. onwards. So I think this is a pretty good time slot for this event. So we're happy with it. And obviously, there's lots of you there. So that's great. What I hope to bring to the panel today and why I think you'll be interested is my experience is working on a lot of different brand accounts. I don't just work on one thing. I work on 10 things. And this question comes up for all of our clients, which is, does social media really matter? Who's using social media? Is social media just blogs? Lots of these sorts of questions. So what I hope to do today is give you a couple of examples from my experience in working with clients that might help you in answering the questions that you've got to answer in your roles.
Right.
Hi, I'm Wynema Mangum, and you can call me Y because I think that would be a lot easier. Tom, could you show my slide? I'm actually in transition from BMC Software to other opportunities. And when I think of the question, social media marketing metrics, where are they? I think of this often seen graphic. You could see it on MySpace. It's kind of a sarcastic answer to Find X. So, you know, I'm not sure at the end of this if we're going to be able to tell you where they are, but I hope you come out of it with kind of more of a customized view of what you can do for your company. You want to know what I do? Should I say?
Tell them what you do. Yeah.
I host and produce Talk BMC, which is BMC Software's conversation channel for everything IT.
And manage 26 bloggers.
But I'm about to not do that.
Everybody's in transition these days. Yeah. It's the next generation economy. I'm with BSG Alliance. My name's Brian Majerski. And I run mergers and acquisitions at BSG, but how that fits with this is BSG is in the business right now of helping companies transform into what we call next generation enterprises. And we think it's a fundamental concept. And I think it hits into social media marketing and how to use it. By next generation enterprise, we believe that there are three trends happening to companies today that are pretty much going to break the old hierarchical structure of companies that has been around for, you know, probably well over 100 years, and force companies to be more global, more ecosystem oriented, more collaborative, and more open. And that's a massive change, and it's a change in DNA of a company, and it's going to impact every what we have known as functions in companies, and marketing is one of those. Customer experience is one of the areas we're in, and I have experience not only in there that I hope to bring to this panel, but we use social media inside, and we encourage our customers to use it for talent management and getting work done inside the company. And it's a fundamentally different way of doing work inside companies. And I'll talk more about what the trends are that are impacting this, but hopefully bringing that notion of customer experience and talent management, the use of social media for those areas of the company, I hope to bring to this panel.
Thank you.
Hi, and I'm Mike Smith. I'm Executive Director of USAA in San Antonio. To give you some perspective, I've been a marketing exec for about 30 years and spent the last 5 or 6 years convincing peer executives, CFOs, CIOs, CEOs why they should not do social media. Most of the time on the justification side, the number one question being, are you measuring anything? Is there any business value or economic value of doing this? So I've sat in a room with those types of folks for the last 6 years explaining why this was a good thing. So what I hope to bring to you today is some of those experiences the last 6 or 7 years talking about this with the executive and in their boardrooms in terms of what their reactions are to social media, and kind of maybe give some perspective on where it is, you know, relative to other things that are on their plate as an executive leadership team for large Fortune companies, of where I've spent probably of the 15 companies I've been at, most of those have been Fortune 100 type companies.
All right. Thanks, Mike. So we're going to kick this off with the first question, and it's really sort of start out with Mike and Rohit, and then we'll move in the middle on this because it sort of hits home on the things that you're most experienced at running up the hill to the C level trying to get approval. What is it about this, you know, the CMO in particular, but it's not always the CMO, you know, the CXO, why are they afraid of social marketing? And, you know, how do you come back and approach them on the issue of metrics, the topic of metrics, knowing full well that there's not a real clear answer on that? You want to start, Rohit?
I could start. I think it comes down to two things. And if you leave today with anything, it's that these are the two things to focus on when you talk about measurement. One is loss of control, right? How do you keep that's the CXO question, right?
Yeah. And when you say loss of control, what do you?
How do you deal with social media and still control it in a way that they're used to? And of course, the answer is you can't. Then it comes down to the measurement question. And I think that in order to demonstrate that value, it comes down to the idea of impressions versus engagement. So as a quick show of hands, how many people are measuring impressions as the way to track people are not going to admit it, but a lot more people than that
are. It's a starting point, though.
It's a starting point, but I think that if you're going to run a campaign based on impressions, the best thing to do is create a sucky Google AdWords campaign. Because what you'll do is you'll get a ton of impressions for free, and nobody will click on your ads because they suck. and you'll be able to show a million impressions that nobody ever paid attention to, right? I mean, we all know that that's not the effective campaign that we want to run. What we want to do is engagement, which is measured by things like time spent, whether somebody's commenting. All of those sorts of metrics tend to mean more. And so when we talk about engagement in the social media sense, if your metric for measurement is, did we get a million views on YouTube, or did we get a couple million impressions to a web page, you're not going to be able to prove the value of social media against all the other things that you could do online, whether it's getting people to a website, buying banners, doing Google AdWords, or just about anything else. If, however, your metric is, let's get the right 10,000 people to watch this, because that is going to have a higher lift on what we do. And there's lots of examples of that. And I'm happy to talk to anybody after the panel about a couple of examples where I've seen brands do that effectively. That is something measurable that you can then take to somebody at a higher level and say, you know what, we didn't get a million impressions, but look at the sales lift here. Look at the depth of conversation we're having with the influencers.
And Mike, you've been up against this multiple times at the boardroom level. What's the big pushback?
I give you perspective across the different CXO types. Each CXO has whether you're a CMO or the head of people services, HR, each one of them has a very different perspective about social media. And that's a very important thing to understand.
Meaning they sort of think about it differently.
Each one has, if you look at the risks,
yeah.
Right? Each one has a little bit different risks, in their mind
risks.
As to what social media basically could do to their company, right? So let me give you kind of a landscape of each one of those.
Yeah.
The CMO is looking at brand control. I think Rohit just said that, right? So if you're a CMO, you're looking to make sure you protect the brand.
Right.
So you're worried about social media in the sense that the brand could get out of control. I'll give you another perspective that the senior leadership that's responsible for human resources is real worried about losing people. I mean, it's a real, it's something that's tangibly discussed. Is that once a company gets involved with social media, they're putting their people out into a community context. It drives those HR folks nuts because the CEO is on their neck to try to retain the corporation's human resources in the company. If you're the PR guy, it can be your biggest friend or your largest nightmare. So if it gets out of control, the PR guy has to look at what kind of damage control they're going to have to do. Look at the chief sales guy. What I have found typically is they don't really care. If it brings in sales, they're real happy about it. If it doesn't bring in sales, they don't care. It's kind of a binary switch. The CEO, and a lot of times is asking the question this way. If I don't do anything, is it going to hurt me?
Right. Yeah.
And so if it comes to a question of, I know I hear all the positives, but from a CEO's perspective, they're looking at it from a company perspective and saying, if I don't do this, will bad things happen to us? The answer is kind of hard to answer that question. The measurement, as Tom asked and Rohit talked about metrics, one of the things they a lot of times don't even get to is talking about the metrics because they have to get over that kind of cultural hurdle of why is this a good thing to do and is it in the company's best interest and is it in the shareholders' best interest in terms of economic business value to the institution. So those are some of the high level things, Tom, that they're asking before you kind of go down that path. And they're also looking at the risks that they'll be up against.
Wanima, you want to chime in on this?
Well, I don't mean to agree with you, Mike, but I do. I know. Totally ruined it.
There'll be some other points to disagree on here.
A lot of times page views don't matter. For traditional marketers, they do. But I agree with Mike in that you have to look at which X in the CXO that you're talking to and really understand what drives them. And let me just give you a silly example. I don't care to see a metric that tells me how many days my hair sucks versus how many days it doesn't, just because that doesn't motivate me at all. Different CXOs will be interested in different things. And for instance, at the communications or the PR level, they may be at a point in their social media maturity where they understand that number of conversations you generate, that's a really great, exciting metric. And if what you're trying to do is influence them or drive them to a decision about supporting what you're doing, which is what you should do metrics for, you shouldn't do metrics just for the sake of metrics.
Right.
You need to understand what motivates them. Seth Godin gives a couple of really good examples about this in his blog. I won't take up any time telling you, but you can go to his blog and just type in metrics and he'll give you a lot of really, really good things to think about.
Brian, I know you've been involved in actually selling systems at the yourself as a vendor to the C-level. And
applications.
That's applications,
right. I want to build on a couple points. Again, it's not in the spirit of healthy debate, but I think it's important to build on it. But I will be controversial, I think, although actually I don't think it's a controversial point. One, the control point. I think that's absolutely it. When you cast yourself out into social media, everybody knows it here, you're putting yourself out there and it's a loss of control. The whole paradigm, it's a new paradigm now. The old paradigm was about control and controlling the message. You deliver a message, you want to get it out to as many people as possible. You can control that message and you want to get those impressions out. This one is complete loss of control to some degree, and it's fulfilling an experience out there, and you're going to get feedback, and you're going to get that feedback fast. And to the question Mike raised, you know, if I don't do anything, what's the harm? The harm is out there. It may be a year away for you as a company. It may be 5 years away, maybe 10 years away, depending what industry you're in. But when you look at the confluence of globalization, the rise of net generation workers, and Web 2.0 technologies, there's no doubt that this openness, both from a company operations standpoint, a marketing standpoint, a customer interaction standpoint, is going to be the way that companies compete in the future. And you're going to have to embrace it at some point in time. So it's hard to, it's not tangible, it's out there, it's in the future. So the problem becomes, if I do something now, there's a lot of harm because most likely it's going to be negative reaction. And the reason is, let's face it, most companies don't know how to deliver a good customer experience. I mean, how many companies do you interact with that deliver you a great customer experience that you don't have something negative to say about? There are a few that you say something positive about, and there are the majority of them are delivering poor customer experiences, and the CXO knows it. The CMO knows it, and they say, well, I'm going to expose myself now by going into social media, and we deliver a poor customer experience, so I know what the impact is going to be. It's going to be negative. And how prepared are we to turn that around fast? And I think that's the big problem right now with adoption. But
yeah, I want to just add a point here. I think that, you know, and sitting in that room, Brian, if a company, and this is where I've seen some success and where I've been able to get initiatives through companies, is if the company is having a negative impression or a brand issue, we've actually seen cases where it had no brand identity at all. A lot of times where I've been able to build a justification business case around it is to help the company build the brand. So, or help the company actually correct a brand. So sometimes you may have to find the executive that is willing to champion that.
Yeah.
But in a lot of cases, you may find a situation where there's a problem you're solving and you can use community and social media, the context of that, to try to get at those kinds of issues.
That's good. All right, let's move on to the next question. Why? You can call me Why. What advice can you give a manager, you know, of a business with no social media experience? And how does this impact metrics?
Ooh.
You're bound to have a few examples.
Like can that, you put that up there for a minute? Because I want to show them what I look like when faced with that
situation. You're dealing with that kind of situation.
Yes, and I have experience in this. No, I've had a really good social media leadership and really bad social media leadership. So the best case scenario you can have is to have people driving your social media program or your online community from the bottom up and from the top down. If your manager isn't driving it from the top down, and this is something that Mike and I did when he was at BMC, he drove from the top down. I drove from the bottom up, and we met in the middle. But if he had not been successful in what he did, and I had, then it would have just been a rebellion. That's what it's called. outside of that, it's a challenge. So what you have to do is you have to get your manager really involved in social media. It's not just enough to be excited or just to have a really excited manager, because that doesn't translate into action. You need to have someone jump into it, be interviewed, get into an online community, start a blog, you know, whatever. If you can't get them to do it and they're still really excited, figure out what matters to them in terms of metrics. Do they have a big ego? I mean, tell them they're going to be famous. I don't know. Peer pressure is a last resort, and it does work. Find one of their colleagues who is doing it and doing it well and who they are, feel a little competition with. That'll get them involved.
I'll leave names out, but I had one executive that wanted to get more public, and that was a mechanism to get social media out, because
he did want to do it
from a publicity standpoint. Yeah. He liked to be out in the limelight, and that was a lever used. Cool. So to Wise point, there could be any number of factors that helps to drive that kind of an initiative through a company.
You other guys, you got any other adds?
Yeah,
to
I was
this?
Just I was just going to add one thing. I think a really important point, which is I think built into what you were saying, Wise, teaching them how to listen more effectively to what people are actually saying about them. For example, you know, you can get a brand executive and you can tell them, you should be paying attention to what people are saying, or you can show them two different ratings on a rating site. One that says, wow, I buy these oatmeal bars three times a day and I eat them all the time. And the other one that says, man, this oatmeal bars taste like banana vomit, which is actually something that was out there. And the brand manager will say, oh, wow, the people are saying this about us already. And there's 19 other people that are linking to this and there's all this stuff going on. That really opens their eyes, because then they say, you know what? We really need to be paying attention to this. And particularly when you're talking about the communication side of it, as opposed to any other team. I mean, you talk to any PR or communications pro, they're used to getting their media reports on a daily basis. Who's the media that covered us? For social media, a lot of them don't really pay attention to that. But if you put it in the same context for them, maybe it is a daily report. Maybe it is something that actually says to them, you're paying attention to what media is saying about your brand. Why wouldn't you pay attention to what these individuals are saying about your brand, who in some cases are writing for publications that have online audiences that are larger than the, you know, the local paper in a suburb of Chicago?
Brian, you have a quick ad?
Quick. I think the peer pressure idea is a good one. because I think in general, some forced behavior, again, it gets to this change concept. Change is very difficult, and especially when you're putting yourself out there and exposing yourself in social media, it's difficult. So We've had success, for customer collaboration, for example. We put collaboration hubs for our customers to interact with each other, and we force them on there by their materials that they paid for, and the only way they can get them is by going onto the hub. And when they start collaborating in that environment, they open up, they understand it, and then they're willing to expand their horizons into other areas of social media.
So this next question is, I think, has some relationship to what we've already brought forward. And we'll keep our answers a little bit shorter on this one, because when we get into sort of the lead generation stuff and whatnot, I want to dwell down in that more. But this next question is it important to self-assess your readiness for social media? I know when we talked about this in our meetings beforehand, it was issues around transparency. You know, not everyone's going to like you. You kind of have to kind of like what you were just saying there, you know, get with the program that, how's the saying go? Opinions are like noses. Everybody has one, you know, so live with it. And listen to what they're saying. But what about that whole issue of self-assessing, and how does that relate to metrics? Anybody?
I think there's one of the things that we've used, which I think has made it easy for some brand folks and marketing folks to understand, is kind of taking a three-phase approach, which is phase one is to start listening. Phase two is to start participating as well as listening. And phase three is when you're ready to start leading. And that to me says you're hosting a platform to do something. You're creating a blog that aggregates conversation. You're running events. I mean, that's the you can't jump straight to that and have any credibility within a community. You need to be able to build from something. So that's one way that we've used to assess readiness, kind of on a phased approach.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to add one of the things in one of the companies I was at, we actually did an internal program first, and to kind of show the trust of the media type. Some of the executives didn't want to do it externally, but We ended up doing kind of a combination of MySpace, Facebook kind of environment, community environment internally, and we're able to demonstrate metrics in terms of productivity horizontally across the company. As you know, most large corporations are command and control, vertically organized. And we were able to kind of demonstrate that there were horizontal benefits of people, particularly in a work stream culture, that were working on multiple projects. And we were able to show some productivity gains out of introducing social media internally, which then were, once we had that there as a learning, as Rohit said, a learning mechanism, they could then kind of extrapolate, maybe there are some positive things externally that would come from this. So it doesn't always have to be an external strategy.
Why?
Well, I think you were saying earlier, you really have to be confident in your product or service before you dive into social media, unless you're going to use the conversation to generate input about what you're doing wrong. So
it's not a bad thing.
No, it isn't. But unless it just is really, really wrong. So I would say just fix the product or service you're selling first, and then dive into conversation marketing.
That makes sense. Brian, anything? Nothing really to add?
No, I think Mike made a good point. We saw a great example of that with a major pharmaceutical company that wasn't quite ready to embrace this external openness per se, but they heard the message and they understand social media and collaboration and the value of it, so they were willing to experiment. And I think experimental culture and collaborative culture is certainly critical starting points to really assess if you're ready for this. And if you're going to reward openness and collaboration in your culture. And they started with a collaboration hub in the research department. And I think it was that plus some wikis and some general enterprise 2.0 tools and approaches. And I think it was within 3 or 4 weeks, they quickly, a couple of folks inside the company had never connected before in the entire history of their time with the company. And they identified $500,000 cost savings almost right out of the gates. So all of a sudden the light bulbs went off. And their major initiative right now is to go headstrong into collaboration.
All right.
We're going to have questions at the...
Gentleman from Ogilvy spoke about metrics at first, and that was incredible. And you guys have talked a lot about convincing corporations to engage in social networks. Maybe you guys could also talk about some of the metrics you use to evaluate those social networks that the companies have embraced. There have been a lot of Twitter messages going back and forth about metrics. Let's hear about the metrics.
Okay. Well, we got 30 more minutes, so we'll be focusing more on metrics. Nothing like getting a little feedback.
Twitter. I love Twitter. Right. I love Twitter. Good times. Good times.
What's that Twitter feed?
What's that feed?
That fad like pockets in the internet.
There's really two pieces. You know, you can have metrics, but without the right strategy, you know, the metrics, they play off one another. And I've got one more question. It's a bit more on the strategy level, so you'll hang in here with it. It has to do with what department should be considered when thinking about a social media strategy, social marketing strategy, and how would metrics determine what you decide with regards to what department? I know sometimes, or a lot of times, it's just strictly politics. Well, who's got the bigger budget? Okay.
Yeah, let me talk. Hey, I listened, right? So I heard metrics, right? Yeah. So let me just kind of talk about this in terms of department. Metrics is going to vary by department that you're going to do your social media experiment in. Okay. So let's talk about this in terms of in marketing, it gets much harder. Heck, us marketers have been able to prove what we've been doing for 20 years. So marketing is a much tougher thing to do. And, you know, that's why I think when people mentioned impressions before, you know, right now, if you look at the field of marketing, I participate on CMO Council. And it's a big dialogue right now in terms of the economic value of marketing besides social media. So I'm going to leave marketing to the side a little bit. But public relations, there are metrics that you can focus on in public relations. And PR professionals, particularly the PR agencies right now, are doing some really good work around looking at the amount of activity that's going on inside the talking of a company. And you can build metrics both in the way they've traditionally done that, which is to look at news articles and all the things we've always tracked in the past. But I've seen two companies that I've been at in the last couple of years that have started to add blog metrics, community participation metrics, and particularly if they did do so, if they had social media programs in their company, they included for the executive staff, of which I was a member, metrics that would articulate the value we were getting out of the different channels. So, right? So if you look at email, you looked at all the different channels that that are communicated to us as a company. We added blogs and we added other channels like that into our metrics. And what was interesting over the period of time looking at that was that the community channel in general, and this is numbers based, was more productive than some of the other channels, and in many cases was easier to measure because you had more direct contact than you did in other channels.
So the kind of things you would measure would be how many other blog articles were written, or blog articles were written at all about the topic or the issue.
Oh, wait, not
comments,
just, not just linking. Even blog, yeah, not even just blog articles, but the comments that were made. So if you look at the amount of commentary on a company, right, on products, services, now some of those are bad, some of those are good. And in one of the companies, they actually track the number of bad comments to the number of good comments, okay? So we were able to then add metrics around that in terms of what we were able to get impressions. As most of you know, if you're a marketer in the room, you know that you spend a lot of money on focus groups and brand research to understand where you are in the market and how your customers feel about you.
Rohit.
And I'll tell you, and probably Rohit can tell you, that we spent a lot of money on that, and we were able to show tangible return on investment on savings on those kinds of things.
So Rohit, you jump in here because I know you've got some specifics.
Yeah,
here.
I think I just wanted to start with a quick poll to illustrate what we're all dealing with. How many people are on Twitter for the conference? Okay. Now, keep your hand raised if you're on Twitter and you believe that there's an ROI for Twitter for you as you're using it. Now, keep your hand raised if you believe you can prove it to your boss. Okay. So I think the problem that we're all having is we know that there's something here. How do we prove it? Where's the metric to prove it? And so to answer that question, I think there's a couple of things. I think that to borrow a page from Tim Ferriss, who's written the 4-Hour Workweek, his part of his idea for the 4-Hour Workweek is, how do you get to 4 hours? Well, you need to have your boss value your output more than the time that you spend producing that output, right? So if you can produce 40 hours worth of great work in 4 hours, and your boss is okay with that, you're golden. Now, translate that question into metrics. I think a lot of what we talk about when we talk about social media metrics is, we need a new tool. We need somebody to come up with a great new technological thing that allows us to measure. And I don't think that we're at a point right now where we lack the ability to measure. I think that there's great tools out there. There's the ability to measure. I think that the problem is that we lack the ability to convince our bosses or have an internal shift that says, these are the metrics that matter. So, for example, if you've ever done any email marketing, everything focuses on clicks and opens.
Yeah.
How many people look at multiple opens and consider that to be an email that's gotten forwarded to multiple people, and therefore multiple people opened it, therefore it was more viral? Fewer people. That's just one example, but there's all of these hidden metrics that we all have access to in the, I mean, if anybody runs Web Trends or any of these big statistical things, I mean, the report is literally that big. And if you're just pulling out impressions and clicks and page views, maybe you're not focusing on the right metrics. So I don't think it's the lack of ability of measuring it. I think it's getting smarter about what you measure and then being able to convince whoever needs to be convinced about the value of those.
And I think there are important things that you can't measure. There are just some very important things that you can't
like
measure
what?
Sometimes. For instance, if I go to Expedia and then decide to go, look for a flight, and then I go directly to American Airlines for something. I don't know why, but I just go there. It's for a certain reason, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah, we'd never know.
I can't
know.
Tell, but yeah. I went directly to American for it. Who knows why?
Right. I mean, you may not know the exact reason, but I would argue that
does
there
American
are people,
know?
Well, they probably don't, but that in itself, I don't think says that the capability isn't there. I think it's just, I mean, there's people who have done their whole PhDs on figuring out human behavior and what something like your example actually says. So I think people can extrapolate out what that is. I think that we are just, as marketers, we're not used to that level of analysis.
It's hard.
Brian.
It is difficult. I think one thing is to try to think about the outcome you're trying to achieve.
Yeah.
And, you know, ultimately we're all trying to sell more product or more services, but how do you get there and what are your campaigns driving toward? What type of purchases? And the one thing that's fascinating to me about social media is the power of the people on the platform. When you think about your networks in social media, they generally are made up of people that you have a high degree of trust in. And maybe subgroups that you trust more on certain topics such as electronics or fashion or something else. And I think one of the big metrics and one of the things to track and one of the big outcomes that can be driven out of social media is referrals. And the issue is I haven't seen a good mechanism for really tracking and doing broad analytics across social media strategies, both your own social media communities as well as those that are out there across the web with which you're interacting with as a company. And how do you track referrals? How do you track referrals that are happening within those communities and across those communities? Those are powerful. Those are that's low cost marketing. It's free marketing. It's word of mouth. I know everybody's talking about it, but the referral coming from a friend and into another friend, that's more likely to influence your purchase behavior than anything else you can, you know, a company can do, to reach you.
Go ahead. Why?
Go ahead. No.
There's one of the huge problems in social media metrics right now is as you mature your program, your things like page views and traffic could actually stay flat or go down. Yet you could be generating more conversation, creating more brand awareness outside of your portal than ever before. So traditional metrics just don't apply anymore. And I have, at the end of this, I have a very interesting case study for metrics that I'll share with you.
So this is also very unstructured content in social media. It's not very hard data. It's a lot of conversations and a lot of text. And there's some advances in sentiment analysis and getting to the positives and negatives, but it's a very difficult problem. It's an extremely difficult problem to solve, to really truly get a positive read on a set of content or a negative read on a set of content. But looking at sentiment analysis, and there's some great research out of Cornell and University of Texas on this very topic that I don't think has been fully applied to social media. I know we started looking at it, but if you can parse out that and figure out sentiment, not only positive and negative, but relative to what product or what topic, and really starting to drill into that type of an analysis and, you know, again, divining what is, you know, looking at a set of content, was this a referral? You know, is this text in here something that looks and smells like a referral and doing it on an automated basis? So you can start facilitating those referrals in these social media systems. I think it's a different set of metrics. It's a different set of approaches to analyzing marketing. And I think it's difficult as well.
It's
very difficult.
There's two completely different worlds when you're talking about business to business, when you're selling from one business to another, $100,000 or multi-million dollar product, the life cycle for the sale is months to years. There's a lot of conversation about the technical nature of the product and technical gurus that know all about IT service-oriented architectures or something like that. But in reality, it might be a two-year life cycle sale. And you'd sort of never know that the guy that was writing who had the left ear of the CEO, the CIO, was putting the multi-million dollar project together, he was reading such and such's blog that whole time and basically basing his whole ideas around that. You know, those are really hard to track. You have a tool, at least, that I've seen at one time in your company that does that, analysis of comments. Is it pro? Is it negative? Or is it neutral? And, you know, we were using that in a situation where you aim that tool at what I call the watering holes of where your client tends to hang out, engineering areas in this particular case. And whenever there was a product release, count the number of times that new product got announced and whether or not they even got the message of the marketing message at all. It gave a good indication on that. The other thing that Dave Evans and I talked a lot about, which I think makes a lot of sense and runs a little contrary to what I had thought in the past, was that a great starting point for metrics when you're starting with a manager who's kind of new to all this is to just make it okay to start with page impressions, unique visitors, and whatnot. Because in just about any social media mechanism that I've been in, the traffic to the blog or blogs and whatnot usually end up superseding the traffic to the main site. It's a good place to start to at least show you've got more traffic. You've got more visibility.
And I can add, Tom, that
that's quantifiable.
And there's been many cases where a very simple thing like how many people were visiting a particular individual's blog with a CEO who didn't want to know all the, you know, ins and outs and the details. But I could say, hey, there, you know, here's a guy and he's got a listening audience of 15,000 people. And because he's talking every day, and I'd get a question from the CEO going, well, how much is it? It's not costing us anything to do that, is it? So if you look at the return on investment on that person talking and having that audience, there are tangible, real benefits. The challenge is, however, is to make those tangible to the executive staff, show them what they get in terms of numbers. And some numbers, even though they may not be real sophisticated, for some of those executives, they're still very powerful numbers to show.
Why, you got something?
Yeah, I have something. I wanted to wait to the end, but I show it
go
to
for
you
it.
We did a really interesting, if you want to see some creative metrics, of course, at the beginning, you're going to want to just know what you can measure and just show what you can measure. But as you get to know more about social media and one of the things you're asked over and over again is, what's the value of social media? So I'm going to give you a very specific and concrete example. We used Giovanni Gallucci at the agency blog to help us do this. And actually, he did it because he was so sick of being asked that question. So he did a whole case study where we got the chief architect of open source strategy at BMC to blog. And we did one blog entry that was very specific and very, it was meant to be almost run like a marketing campaign. And it was called Why Microsoft Loves Open Source. It was meant to be a bit controversial. And it was meant to gain a lot of attention. And it's something that Whirly really wanted to talk about. So Gio went out and he actually measured, you know, they did just with their organic network, they told people about this blog entry. And it went out to, I think, 126 different really large domains. And we just, I think we did 10 or 12 of those. They ranked, they got the page ranking of each of the referrers and kind of estimated what a link broker would charge you for say being on the front page of Dig, being on the front page of Slashdot and things like that. And he translated into it, and they just did it on keywords. Microsoft, open source is two words, and open source is one word. And he came to the conclusion that the total value of that campaign, which was one blog entry in traffic, branding, and buzz, after 48 hours, now he annualized this, if you were able to do this every 48 hours, it was $821,094 and some change. So that's a very creative way of showing to your PR person, here's the value of social media, or your marketing person, or your CFO, or whoever wants to hear it. But you can go to the agency blog and ping Gio if you want to know more about that.
You know, we actually have another question, but I think what we're going to do is go ahead and open up to the Twitter crowd.
Twitter.
Okay, so we can have some lights and first question. Because I know they'll probably ask about lead generation. Anyway, go ahead.
I had a question about just aggravating different types of important metrics. I do social media coordinating in the music industry.
Yeah.
One of the biggest roadblocks that we run into with marketing our artists, especially when it comes to TV, video, radio, and tour placement, the only metric that people want to know is what's their sound scan. Okay. And especially in a world with illegal file sharing going on, that metric's going to be a little low. Is there anybody that's aggregating kind of like a score where it aggregates their presence on the web, including their YouTube plays, their friends on all their social networks, their illegal file share downloads, so that maybe that could be termed as something like a virtual sound scan of sorts?
Wow.
Is there anybody aggregating anything like that, including velocity, how fast something travels?
I hope nobody's measuring illegal downloads.
They should be, because it's a true measure of popularity.
I know.
Yeah, yeah.
I have an artist that sold 20,000 CDs, but they have 500,000 downloads, and that's a measure of their popularity. Mm. So I think that there should be credit given for that.
You know, Rohit?
Yeah, I think there's I've seen – I can't remember the name of the tool, but I've seen a tool where you can actually input – if you know all of these places – where they are, you can input all of them and aggregate them together yourself.
I'd be so they're not doing to talk
that.
Later about
so y'all that. Can get together on that.
Yeah, maybe I can remember. I'm sure it's in my email.
Why don't you blog about that? I'd like to know.
It's kind of like a social media report card of sorts.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's specifically about video, but I'm pretty sure there's like an MP. I mean, you're talking about audio files, right?
I'm interested in everything from audio files.
Yeah,
to,
I think basically what the
to
tool
blogs,
does.
To videos.
Maybe there's the vendor for the tool here, and they can raise their hand, but. It's basically if you know that the video is on YouTube and on Metacafe and a bunch of other places, and you know that the audio file is on these other places, you basically input all of those places, and it'll aggregate all of the downloads together.
It'd be great if Nielsen and Billboard published that.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good question.
Next question.
My name is Dave Evans, and the case study that we just saw made a great case for social media metrics and the value. On the marketing side, but what I'm really interested in is the use of social media metrics on the operations side. Rohit, you made the point, you made one of the points about key metrics. Brian, you talked about the customer service experience. Rohit, you were talking about the ability to control the conversation. It seems like that really happens in operations, right? I mean, Mike, think about USAA and the customer service experience since the digitization of information. You call USAA, any customer service person can tell you immediately the status of your policy, right? It makes for a great experience. So it seems like one of the key values of social media is really tracking it as an operations guide. But then you're immediately in this challenge of inside a siloed organization, marketing is collecting it, but marketing is trying to shift effort and budget into operations where you can actually do something that controls the conversation on the social web. You want to talk about that a little bit?
I'll just quickly start because I think you raise a really important point, which is about the silos. This is actually I have like a passage about it in my book that's coming out because that is something we deal with all the time, which is there's the PR channel, there's the marketing channel, there's customer service. And usually what happens with marketing is the marketing focuses on getting the message out. And as soon as somebody becomes a customer, it goes off to this like retention team. And they don't think like marketers. Mm-hmm. And if they're not thinking like marketers, then all of a sudden you don't have any ability to take the people who could be your best spokespeople and help them to do more. I mean, the single reason why people who buy from you don't tell other people, the biggest reason, this is something that every marketer, like anytime I tell them this, they don't believe it because the single biggest reason is that you didn't ask them to. And if you just asked them to, they would tell a lot of people. If you gave them something to do, right? Because not everybody hates your brand, just the people who you see most vocally, right? So it's easy for brands to believe, oh, everybody hates us. And maybe there are some brands where a lot of people hate them, okay? I'm not saying there aren't. But for a lot of brands, it's just that they haven't done a good job of getting the people who like them to tell more people about how much they like them. So that gets to your point of in this siloed organization, we need more marketing thinking in some of the other groups that aren't used to doing it.
Yeah, and since you mentioned USAA, where I've been the last couple of months specifically, which is a community of 5 million people that the association serves, it's real interesting you commented that because in a lot of ways, it is kind of an end state of a community, right, which is sitting there. And so what's interesting about that is that we measure that every day just as a routine part of service, right? So to your point about operations and service, we have a large amount of metrics that says, how are we doing when our membership calls? So you can start to apply those kinds of principles in a metrics, like you absolutely said, in a metric sense.
I make a brief point too. The customer service side, I think, is a fascinating area to start because these are your customers and you're getting feedback. And I think operational metrics from, if you think about that as an operations standpoint, efficiency and just the overall efficiency of customer support organization. If you're truly fostering a community and driving self-support, your customer service costs are going to go down substantially. If you're applying those social media tools and collaboration tools internally, the ability to get to an answer quickly for a customer from the support rep is going to go down dramatically as well. So it's going to be a lot faster response times, a lot more calls or a lot more support requests handled, and fewer. You know, it's a cultural issue, fewer reps because of self-support. But there are real operational metrics that you can monitor from a successful community effort.
Okay, thanks.
A lot of the things that I read on this topic on the internet really pertain to kind of faster companies. And it's interesting, one of the studies you gave was a big pharma, and then you work at USAA. I consult for old school services companies like law firms and accounting firms on their overall strategies of building relationships both on and offline. And my question is, how do you even get them to the table to talk about the metrics when these people are dinosaurs who won't agree or won't even admit that the meteor is coming? How do you even get them there when everything they want up front is, well, what's the ROI? Where's the proof for my industry when they're many years away from having examples in their industry? How do you get them to talk about it?
Great question. Who wants to tackle that one?
Yeah, I'll start just by challenging an assumption, which I probably shouldn't say given that I'm on this panel, which is, you know, maybe it right now it doesn't have the value for them. And you know, that's a simple, honest truth that it pains me to say because I'm a blogger and, you know, I want everybody to see the value of that. But some businesses, you know, for example, in pharma, there are some pharma clients where, you know, we talk about listening, but if they hear somebody having experience with their drug, they're obligated by law to do something about it. Now, you want to stand in front of a pharma brand manager and say they need to be listening when that could create this whole legal problem for them? Of course not, right? So, I mean, there's situations where it may not. But to your point, I think one thing that's really effective is what I think a couple of people have talked about, which is the peer pressure to find a great example of somebody they consider as a competitor who is doing something smarter than they are.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I want to. So one of my clients is the guy still there? There he is. Okay. One of my clients is a law firm, and so they're really big in DWI, DUI, and then another one's personal injury. And the way I did it was to show them this is kind of the classic search engine optimization thing. Look, these guys, your competitors, are showing up in the search engines, and it's not their home page. It's the blog articles from that guy's website or that firm's website. You know, and there's another one here, and there's another one here, and there's another one here, and all the key terms. They will agree what the key terms are. DWI, lawyer, Austin, DWI, attorney, Houston, you know. And that sort of at least gets their gears rolling a little bit, because they go back and look at their site and they go, well, we don't have that. So,
yeah. All right. I think the social media adoption, just finding an entry point, it doesn't necessarily have to be marketing per se. Yeah. I mean, start small, but, you know, if you can find an operational case to make on customer support or something like that, I think the important thing is social media is a fabric and it's a tectonic shift in the way companies are run, and it's going to cut across the entire company. Marketing's one function. It may start somewhere else. They see real tangible returns right away and get comfortable with it, and then it'll grow across the company.
And particularly regulated. You made a comment about some companies you can't get them to the table. Regulated industries, things that have compliance issues. There are some companies, to your point, that are much more risk sensitive than others. So you've got to Rohit's point, be sensitive to the fact that different kinds of companies may have more at risk or actually more things that they have to worry about.
One good thing to answer the what's the ROI question is another question. When I'm talking especially to PR people, is what's the ROI of a press release? What's the ROI of one of your corporate strategists or one of your sales reps or business development managers? What is the ROI of their conversation one-on-one with the customer or prospect? Now take that ROI and scale it to internet proportions, and that may help. I'm not sure.
Thank you. Next question.
I'm a dinosaur. In that, I've been through a few cycles. One of those back in the early 90s, as far as adoption goes, we had the same type of opposition to web. And I think what's happened, you know, exactly. We saw that come along and we saw people getting spoiled because now all of a sudden they were able to measure all this stuff on the web and now we demand it. And I think we need to kind of back off of that a little, maybe go over to what Rohit was talking about as far as going through, you know, after the sale and doing focus studies and finding out from people, okay, what the fact that we have a blog on our website, what did that influence you, even though you didn't look at it or you didn't even participate? Because not everybody participates. There's a lot of lurker consumers out there. And so my question is, are there any studies that are out there right now that say, okay, 25-40% of people are lurkers, and by virtue of having social media and engaging these people and knowing that they will be heard if they were to have an issue with your product and thereby minimizing their risk, but they don't have to participate? Or is there any metrics or any studies going on out there on that?
Do you know Rohit?
Yeah, I don't know that there's a one silver bullet bullet case study. I mean, I think that one thing that did bring to mind is there's a fellow that I've kind of we've emailed back and forth on our blogs. His name is Bruce Reyes Chow, and he's got a blog, sort of a marketing blog, but he's basically a pastor, and he's got his own church in San Francisco. And one of the interesting things he shared with me is he basically just blogs about, you know, his religion, and it's people who go to his services that read. And he said that 75% of the people who came to the church had seen his blog first. So you want to talk about building a relationship with people who may be lurkers for a while before they finally decide to take the plunge and go in on Sunday to church, which is a big time commitment, right? And you really want to know that you're not going to waste your time or fall asleep in your chair. And he really does a great job of personalizing and of humanizing that experience. So, I mean, it's not a business example, but it is one of those examples where there is a lot of lurkers, and now you know that it is actually having an impact, because what he does is he asks them afterwards. Right. So you raised the great point. That's what you need to do.
Right. Next. Thank you. Next question.
Hi. My question is, I run an interactive agency in Boston, and several times we've pitched to clients and presented to clients who have not been interested in social media until an issue of crisis management comes up. And then, lo and behold, we get a phone call, usually off hours.
Do something now.
Yeah, the team is assembled, and we want to know, can we do everything from, you know, drastic measures to how do we take
commenting on the consumerist.
Exactly. Actually, yes. consumerist and Flickr and platforms and move, fast, we'll throw money in it. Just get it happening right now.
Yeah.
So I guess the question is twofold. One, about crisis management. And two is about entry points, because people's disposition towards social media changes dramatically based upon where you enter and the pain that they're feeling at the given time.
Yeah.
Brian? Anybody?
I mean, I can take a quick stab at it. I don't want to monopolize the panel. But I think one important thing is the typical corporate response is to start with the press release. The problem with that, and the easily demonstrable thing about that, is that a press release is not a platform. And so when you put the press release out, where are you going to point people to? Are you going to point people to the PR news web place where you put the press release, which is not a branded environment or offer any more details? Or are you going to be able to put them to something that actually does have a platform that gives you a chance to respond? So yes, we get those calls too for the clients that we've been pitching for, you know, 2 years, and they haven't done anything. And then all of a sudden, it's the crisis response thing. I don't know. The only answer I have to that is that is an opportunity to do the good job with the crisis thing and hopefully demonstrate that if they had only had a platform. And I have some great examples of brands, which I'm happy to talk to anybody about afterwards, that have used their platform of blogging to manage a crisis when it happened because they had the blog.
I can tell you that from a risk mitigation standpoint, if you have the ability to go in, when they're already in crisis, they're already scrambling. So I can tell you, if sitting at the table with those executives, all they want to know is, how do I solve the problem, right? So they will pay you a lot of money if you can help them solve that problem quickly. They also are more likely to listen to you. They're not probably likely to listen to you very much until you solve their problem. but once you solve it, you'd be surprised how much they'd like to have you at the table so it doesn't happen again.
And I argue that would be a good case study to have in your pocket for the folks that aren't facing a crisis that you're trying to sell.
Right.
Thank you. I know we've got like 2 minutes left. That's probably not the right time to change the course of the conversation. But my question is, so if you look at the audience that uses social media the most, you're looking at a younger generation. You're looking at a generation from, you could say 13 to 24 year olds probably spend more time within the world of social media than any other group. And if you look at the economy of the whole thing, you've got billions of dollars that are at stake here, billions of dollars that are being poured into advertising on social media. And the reason for a conversation being, I guess, put in the term of metrics is because of all that money that's being spent. And I know we spent a lot of time talking about relationships and fostering conversations. But what do you have to say to all the companies that, you know, are under some pressure not only to spend within the world of social media, but also the social networks themselves? I mean, you got a company like Facebook, if their value is about $15 billion, say, how is that value going to be realized? What metrics are they going to have to give to their advertisers that are going to convince them to keep giving them the money.
The best thing Facebook can do, I think, is foster referrals without being an Amway platform. Legitimate, relevant referrals. I haven't seen a single good ad on Facebook. I don't know how they're going to make money, quite frankly. The advertising just doesn't seem relevant in that environment. I think they need a new model, a different model than what's out there right now. I think referrals is one piece, but it can't be pay me to refer to my entire network. It's got to be legitimate, genuine referrals that were appreciated, and I'm getting some kind of rating for that. And from the people that, I referred. Yeah. That's one. It's just one. But
I think your question goes to a really central one, which is scale. How does this social media effort that we're doing scale? And when you think about ROI, the problem in some cases is what's the I, really? I mean, you paid $25 to register a TypePad blog, and you got time from people to actually put into it. But it's not as if you went out and you contracted for a huge, massive web presence for the eye. So the question really is, let's say a brand decides to run one fewer TV spot, and now they've got $1 million to spend in social media. I mean, how are you going to spend that? What are you going to do with $1 million, right? Or $100,000 or $10,000? I mean, whatever the number is, the real challenge is, what's the smart way of spending it so that you're not just buying ads and you're creating something that actually has a lasting value and isn't just a gimmick that lasts for a month and goes away?
The thing to remember about I want to talk about social media versus advertising. And what we did with this case study is we took a blog entry and we treated it as if it were an advertisement. But the truth of it is that it was editorial content on all of these sites. So if I had put an advertisement on all of these sites, it would have gone away as soon as it expired. But this content stays up there forever and ever and ever. So the value of a social media campaign or entry or whatever is far beyond anything you can do with an ad, I think.
I think we are out of time. I'm sorry. All right.
One more.
Are we allowed?
Bonus question here.
Right. Bonus question.
Bonus.
Fantastic. What experience do you have working with redirects or unique URLs and implanting them in different social media platforms? So, for example, I do a human rights video. We'll put it on Metacafe or YouTube and stuff like that. And, I'm thinking of using that strategy just to
redirect to where?
Redirect to our website or using you. Yeah, exactly. Like they watch like a 10-second video clip and try and watch the whole thing, or in social media using blogs and doing marketing outreach. What platforms have you found if you have used unique URLs? Because like what you're saying is you can't actually get the metric because it's, housed someplace else. And unless you have a close relationship with the software provider, you don't have the log file. So you can't actually get the metrics. But there's tricks that you can do to try and like get those, which are unique URLs, or so that you can track which blog it was on. If you put an ad or if you put a video or a piece of content and you say click here, you know which one. So yeah. I'm just wondering if any of you have used that strategy and how successful was it?
I think there's two sides to your question. It's a good question about like whether to use the embedded URLs. I think if you're looking at like a Metacafe or any of those sites where people are clicking directly from the links, that's probably a situation where you could rely on some of the referral traffic, but you could use it's sort of one way or the other. I think that the situation where you definitely want to use the unique landing pages or the URLs is probably the stuff that you see on a lot of these postcards running around here, which is whatever/SXSW. Because people are typing that in directly. They're not clicking from something. So you're not going to get the clickstream data that you would get if somebody were on Metacafe and then they click on something. You're going to get people typing it in directly. And that's really the situation where you need to have that direct URL, because otherwise you have no way of tracking that. Yeah, you could definitely do that. But if somebody's typing it in directly, you'd need a specific URL for that. Mm-hmm. But not if they get the card from the table over here at South by Southwest, right?
mean, if they get a card, they're... Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, you could do that too. Yeah, you could definitely do that. Yeah.
Hey, no, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.